Hello, I'm Lina Khmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. October 1st marks the United Nations International Day of Older People, an event commemorated around the world. It is a moment to raise awareness of opportunities and challenges faced by aging populations, raise awareness and support for the elderly. The theme this year is Aging with Dignity, the importance of strengthening care and support systems for older persons worldwide. In Nigeria, as in other countries in sub-Saharan Africa, the elderly population is increasing rapidly and there are concerns about the rights and health needs of older people. VOA spoke to some older people in Abuja about the challenges they face. Here is more.
A recent study by the National Institutes of Health shows that less than half of the elderly persons in Nigeria have access to affordable, good quality healthcare services. It also showed that 70% of the elderly population in Nigeria lives below poverty line. Dr. Sylvester Onoja is a septuagenarian and retired principal of King's College, Lagos. He criticizes the lack of healthcare facilities for the elderly.
If your children are not there for you, there's no hope. That care is not there. If it is there, it's not reaching the people who need it. So the welfare of the elderly in this country is at its very lowest, in terms of performance, it's almost non-existent. Once you are old, your welfare is only in the hands of your children. Beyond that, there's no help from anywhere else.
In Nigeria, family members play a significant role in caring for older persons, providing up to 70% of home care. Ruth Emeje, a retired assistant director in a federal ministry, is unhappy with how the government handle issues concerning older persons, including its own former employees.
It is unfortunate. From outlook of things, it's like the government don't even want the elderly that have spent all their lives in serving the government. During the year of service, you have nothing to do other than to serve. Now you have finished service and there is no plan for you at all.
Poverty remains a major challenge across Nigeria, but older persons who no longer can work are most vulnerable to experiencing economic hardship, increased health challenges, and a dramatic rise in medical expenses. Emmanuel Onwubiko is a rights activist and a former national commissioner of the National Human Rights Commission of Nigeria. He says older people are largely neglected and their human rights deteriorating across the country.
If you don't respect their human dignity, you subject the older persons to all sorts of deprivation, then you're not protecting their dignity. And that is exactly what is happening in Nigeria. You see a lot of old people on the streets begging because they don't have the means to sustain themselves, to stay in one place. There are even no retirement homes anywhere in the country. There are no old people's homes.
Onwubiko laments that Nigeria has no functional national policy on the care and welfare of older persons.
Well, as far as a lot of Nigerians are concerned, the rights of the older citizens of Nigeria are actually not adequately being cared for. And the institutions that ought to speak for them, the National Human Rights Commission, is not actually working.
He urged the Nigerian government to prepare and enact policies that will promote the well-being of older persons in the country. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
Old people the world over are confronted with ageism, discrimination due to their age. Experts say ageism impacts seniors' access to adequate health sources and it affects their well-being. For more insight, I spoke with Carola Django, Global Initiatives Lead and Africa Regional Representative for Help Age International. Here is more.
Ageism is where you discriminate against an individual on the basis of their age. This happens at two levels. You can have ageism against younger people and ageism against older people or ageism even against middle-aged people. But what is most common is where discrimination happens at the against older people because of their age. They're not seen to have been they've lived their life, they are no longer valued in society, they've got nothing to offer, they're a problem to society, they shouldn't have a voice, they should basically be seen and not be heard. So that is very common. Amongst younger people, it plays out, especially in the job front, where you advertise for a job, a young person comes, they have the qualifications, they may not have the experience, but they have the knowledge to be able to gain this experience, but to dismiss them basically because of their age. So that happens quite a lot. And ageism is something that is manifested, but it's also under the surface. That we have to look at ageism from the perspective of the manifestations, but we also have to look at it from the basis of the root causes. So we have to look at the stereotyping, the prejudices, and then, of course, the discrimination, which is what we see. In the African context, we see a lot of ageism against older people. In certain communities, they're just neglected. As they wait to die or they're put aside to die. In other places, they're actually victimized. So you'll find that there is a lot of violence that is meted out on them simply because they're old and they're seen to be a burden. We see that in health facilities where an older person then doesn't get the help they need. But rather they get violated because they're old, they've gone to hospital maybe for help, they're not able to walk or to express themselves well, and the healthcare providers, instead of finding a way of dealing with this challenge that they face, actually dismiss them or even just push them aside. Then we've got cases of violence that manifests where we have older women, especially being violated. We have cases of older women being accused of witchcraft. This is very common in parts of Africa, Kenya, Tanzania, Malawi, in places like the Ghana, where they even have a camp for older women where they're named as witches and they're kept there. But this is not because they're seen as witches. It's because they have property that the rest of the community or the society wants. And because they're old, weak, probably vulnerable, then they become an easy target. And then there's also the issue of their agency, where they're not seen to be able to contribute as a sector of society. Because many times, you will seek the voice of young people, you'll seek the voice of certain groups of professions, you will seek the voice of even geographical people from a geographical location, but you will never seek the voice of older people. So we see that happening a lot. And then, of course, the problem of inheritance, where older people then are victimized, violated, and even killed, because the younger people or their children want to inherit their property.
You know, you mentioned so many important points. There is one in particular that I wanted to touch on. In Africa, we see often that a lot of old people are accused of witchcraft. And the countries you named, yes, but there are so many other countries as well.
Yes.
So
yes.
Is it because old people in the African context tend to be witches and sorcerers? Or is it because with age comes certain behaviors that tend to appear as a witchcraft?
I don't think it's because older people are predominantly witches or practice witchcraft. In communities where witchcraft is practiced, you will find that it's across sector of the communities. We have a community in my country where they have night runners, which you could say is a sort of a practice that revolves around witchcraft. They have young people, they have able-bodied people, they have people with disabilities, they have different kinds of people because that community practices it. So it's not unique to older people. But we have communities. I know a community like in the coast of Kenya, where when people become old, they bend over because their bone structure changes, the wrinkles on their faces, they have red shot eyes. A lot of times women, you've been using firewood all your life, so your eyes tend to be red. Your hands are probably deformed because of arthritis. And those then are seen as the markers of witchcraft or of witches. And so they're labeled witches, not because that community even practices witchcraft, but because of their physical appearance. So then they're labeled to be witches. So it is not because older people are the ones who practice witchcraft. In communities where witchcraft is practiced, you will find all sorts of people across all ages, across all formations, practicing. So the reason older people are targeted and victimized, it's simply because of their vulnerability that has come because of age. So if you find an older person who is bent over, for example, that means that this person, their bone structure is vulnerable, it's weak. And so they're targeted because even if they're accused, they won't be able to defend themselves. It's an excuse. Something has happened. You cannot explain it. You want to use witchcraft to explain it. So you look for a victim. You look for somebody to blame on that. We've had the cases in a certain part of Kenya, Kisii, recently, where there's a child who died. I think the child may have died because of negligence. It's not been established. It could have been the negligence of their parents. Maybe the parents were poor, they didn't have money to take the child to hospital. Maybe the hospital was far. There could have been any amount of reasons. But for them to justify why this child died and probably remove the blame for them from themselves if there was negligence, is to point at the next old woman who's a neighbor and say that this person is a witch and they looked at the child badly. You can't prove a lot of those things. And that's why then society simply accepts it. It becomes a social norm. It becomes a stereotype. And the more, when one is accepted, another one would be accepted. Another one would be accepted. And it becomes the norm in that society. And unfortunately, the older people that are targeted have no recourse whatsoever. Because once a society accepts it, we've seen the cases where older women are lynched. If you speak to the people in those societies, they tell you, we can't tell you whether they're a witch or not, but we've been doing this for so long, so we've come to accept it. Yeah.
So how does ageism affect the mental health and well-being of older individuals in African communities?
Where ageism exists, then that means that there's discrimination. Then discrimination is almost always followed by a violation. So this happens, like if you're discriminated against because you're old, let's take the case of COVID. When COVID-19 hit and the vaccines were rolled out in Africa, it was not always very easy to get them. So the queues were very long. And we knew that COVID affected older people. They're more predisposed to COVID. But what would happen in many, many cases in Africa, in the studies that we did, you'd find that when older people would go for the vaccines, number one, the queues would be very, very long and there'd be there'd be no attention paid to the fact that these older people cannot queue for that long. So they'd be made to wait in the queues. When the vaccinations would start, you'd hear health workers saying, we want to save the younger people, since in any event, you older people are dying, you don't need the vaccine. Of course, that affects you as a person, that affects your mental health. And it also doesn't make sense, because if it's the older people who are predisposed to the virus, then why not protect them first? Why not make arrangements to make sure that they get vaccinated first? So, of course, that had a very serious effect on older people. When you go to a doctor and you're pushed aside, it affects your mental health. But it also affects the mental health of your caregivers, your children, or the people who take you to hospital, because then you don't get the treatment you deserve. They don't know whether you're going to survive or not. That affects your mental health and their mental health. So, and then of course the isolation, some of the isolation, cases of isolation that come about when older people are pushed aside, that also affects their mental health.
So what specific strategies does HelpAge employ to combat ageism and promote the rights of older people?
At HelpAge, we work on four main issues. We work on income security. We work on healthy aging, inclusive humanitarian action, and we work towards a society for all ages. So to do that, then, one, we prioritize the issues of older people. We make sure that we have the rights, the voice, the agency is taken care of, so that then we're taking care of issues of discrimination, taking care of the issues of their well-being and their dignity. And those are underlying issues that if we address, we begin to sort out some of the problems that older people face. So practical examples, when we have a lawmaking process in the country, like now there's the senior citizens laws that are being passed in a lot of countries in Africa, we mobilize our network members to make sure that we get the views of older people reflected in that lawmaking process, because then we don't want hypothetical laws. We want laws that are informed by the lived realities of older people. We also make sure that older people are able to build agency, and we support the creation of older people's associations where older people can come together and build agency around issues that affect them in society, and also issues that may not be related to aging, but because they're part of society, they're able to take part in those issues, such as the elections in countries, other lawmaking processes, where we have administrative issues that need to be addressed. We make sure that older people's views are heard, so that any administrative decisions being made take into account the needs, the rights and the well-being of older people. So we try to make sure that there is inclusion of older people, that the data that informs laws and policies is disaggregated on the basis not only of sex and disability, but also on the basis of age, because that is very important. And we also engage in advocacy at the global level, because the policies that are made at the global level then trickle down to national level. So we make sure that inclusion of older people is a given. So right now we have the Pact for the Future being negotiated, and we have been working through our membership in the Stakeholder Group on Aging as part of the major groups and other stakeholders to make sure that the language in the pact is age inclusive. And the future that we're looking at is a future that is inclusive of people of all ages, because it's a given in the next 20 or so years, we will have a society that will have six generations living together. And we want to make sure that the rights of older people are included in those policies. So we bring that evidence to the table.
And finally, what is your message?
We have a couple of messages. The first one is that older people are human beings who have rights. like everybody else. When the Universal Declaration on Human Rights was passed, it was not passed for any age group. It was passed for every human being in the world. Older people are human beings, and they have a right. They're rightful right holders as everybody else. Number two is we have a slogan that says older people are older and they're not over. That means that they have a voice, they have something to contribute to society, and their lived experiences should not be ignored on the basis of ageism. Because the fact that a person has reached a certain age, we can learn from the experiences that they have gone through. So we're saying that bring the experiences of older people to the table so that it informs the future, because they have the experience, they've lived through it. Our third message is that even though we look at a future mainly from a young lens, these young people will grow older. So we want to use the lived experiences of older people to inform the experiences of the younger people. So intergenerational solidarity is extremely important, because we don't want the younger people, for example, to go through the ageist attitudes and to live through the ageist problems, such as the banning of older women on the basis of ageism. We want those addressed so that when the younger people step into older ages, they step into an older age where the rights, their well-being, and their dignity is upheld.
Carol Ajango, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lino.
That was Carol Ajango, Global Initiative Lead and Africa Regional Representative for HelpAge International. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. Tuberculosis remains a critical public health issue in many countries and is the second leading cause of death in South Africa. Over the past 6 years, the Beat Tuberculosis study conducted in South Africa and focused on children and pregnant women has revealed a promising new oral treatment that could mark a significant breakthrough in the fight against drug-resistant TB. Zahir Kasim reports.
These pills are part of a drug trial in South Africa that may help revolutionize tuberculosis therapy. A new regimen cured 85 to 90% patients with drug-resistant TB, up from 50% for previous regimens. Plus, the treatment worked for two key groups often left out of TB treatment research.
We found safe and effective treatment for pregnant women and children, but also we've awakened the field to say, actually, this has to be done.
Women, children, and men in the Beat Tuberculosis trial all received the same regimen. That's a change from previous treatments, even though TB often affects entire families.
The daddy gets one easy regimen to take, and then the mom gets a more complicated one because she's pregnant, and the child gets an even more complicated one. Dad is cured after 6 months. Mom is cured after 8 months. And we wait, or 9 months. We wait for 18 months for us to be able to know if a child is cured. So that's really an unfortunate set of circumstances.
The study shortened treatment of 6 months for everyone, and it did so without the harsh side effects of previous treatments.
People would say to me, Doc, I would rather have TB than the medicines that you're giving me. So in the olden days, they were terrible, and a third of our patients, half of them would lose their hearing.
Dr. Pauline Howe supervised the study. She says the new regimen has the backing of the World Health Organization.
That basically means that countries can take the recommendation of the regimen and run with it, which is fantastic, because the more options we give countries to work with, the more options we can then translate to patients who need treatment.
Leslie Marbury is Southern African Mission Director for the United States Agency for International Development. She says breakthroughs like this new treatment could eventually pave the way for a world free of, or at least less troubled by, TB.
They're coming from high-burden countries like South Africa, who are motivated, then I feel confident that we can end tuberculosis as a global health challenge.
TB claims over 1 million lives each year, But experts say with early detection, simplified treatment regimens, and greater access to life-saving drugs, these deaths can be dramatically reduced. Sahil Kassim, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
A cholera outbreak is affecting Sudan, particularly in the states of Kassala, Gedaref, and River Nile. The Ministry of Health has recorded more than 5,000 cases of cholera and at least 191 deaths. The international NGO Doctors Without Borders has set up several centers to treat patients, but the situation is not under control, according to health officials. Here is more with Blanche Sanou, narrated by Anthony Labruto.
Sudan has been hit by torrential rains for several weeks, leading to the displacement of thousands of people. There has been an increase in cases of diarrheal diseases, especially among children. The state of Kassala has been especially impacted by cholera, and authorities have appealed to the international community for urgent and immediate assistance.
The current status for cholera since now, we cannot say that today the situation is under control. We still have a lot of challenges from everywhere. And currently in the CTC now, we have 261 patients. And still now we continue to receive new admission.
The World Health Organization has stated that more than 455,000 additional doses of vaccines will be sent to Sudan to help the country tackle the cholera epidemic.
Today we receive many patients come in critical state. And for us to save those patients, it becomes very difficult because they come with gasping, and to save those patients, it's very difficult.
Cholera is an acute diarrheal infection caused by the consumption of contaminated food or water. The disease causes diarrhea, severe hydration, and can lead to death within hours.
So today, there is many reasons. The first one is access to water. There is no access of water in terms of quality and cutting sanitation. Inside the IDP's camp, refugees camp, and also in the community.
The war has led the country to the brink of famine, and humanitarian organizations denounce insecurity and bureaucratic measures that hinder the delivery of aid, a situation made worse by floods and poor road conditions.
Desiree Buyana Misati is in charge of the National Health Promotion Communication Program of the Congolese Ministry of Health in North Kivu province. He discusses some of the challenges as well as advances in the fight against cholera.
Cholera is a disease that causes the body to lose fluids frequently, causing dehydration. This dehydration leads to death. The treatment mainly consists of products that aim to rehydrate the body. Additionally, some antibiotics can be added to the treatment protocol and are highly effective against Vibrio bacteria. Regarding the water supply system in displaced persons' camps, both governments and partners provide support, such as large trucks, to deliver water to the displaced camps. However, during a recent assessment, we found that the water supply to IDPs is still insufficient. Sometimes days go by without the displaced people receiving water. We have found that this lack of water is the root cause of some cholera cases that arise in the camps. We had organized some vaccination campaigns, but even the vaccine manufacturers have determined that to be effective, vaccinations must be accompanied by other steps that I mentioned. Hygiene measures such as clean water and sanitation and the availability of water in households, as well as environmental hygiene. This includes waste disposal, treatment, and monitoring water far from the population, along with household hygiene, like cleaning utensils and all the materials and tools used in households. This reinforces the effectiveness of vaccines, even though these vaccines, according to the manufacturers, have an efficacy rate of only 60%. There is still a remaining 40% that depends on the hygiene measures we must implement.
That was Desiree Buyana Misati, in charge of the National Health Promotion Communication Program of the Congolese Ministry of Health in North Kivu Province. That is all for this edition of Health Chat. Thank you all for joining us, and thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Mudu, in Washington, with producer Mugbilia Barrow. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.